Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, it's me, Mike. I run the Sonar Podcast Network, the very one you're listening to right now. I love podcasting and I love the Canadian podcast community. And if you're a podcaster, work in podcasting, or just someone who loves podcasts, you're going to want to listen up. I'm proud to announce that I've been working very hard behind the scenes on an incredible podcasting event in Toronto on June 6th, the Soundwave Summit 2024. And as a Sonar listener, you get 15% off on all tickets with the code SONAR15. An awesome group of podcast companies and creators have banded together to create a space for podcasters and fans to build community, share knowledge, and celebrate indie productions. There will be a ton of informative sessions all day, including talks from Canada Land, Vocal Fry, Black Canadian Creators, Lead Podcasting, and of course, from us, the Sonar Network. In the evening, there will be a showcase of live podcast recordings from Blacklantic, Squirrel Talk, and the Women of Ill Repute. And it's all emceed by the amazingly talented and Survivor-winningest host of Happy to See Me podcast, Erica Kostupinen. Join us for insightful workshops on podcasting, networking with industry pros, drinks, and overall amazing opportunities to meet and collaborate with like-minded podcast lovers. Come for the sessions in the day, the live podcast showcase at night, or better yet, come for the whole thing. Tickets are going fast, so get them now at thesoundwavesummit.com. And don't forget to use the code SONAR15 for 15% off all tickets. That's SONAR15. See you there.
Hi, it's me, Ben.
And it's me, Abba.
And you're listening to Nostalgic.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Ava. I'm so happy today.
And Why are you happy?
I've been baking more. I'm on a baking journey.
Yeah, your chai. What was it? Cardamom?
Cardamom cake with get this brown butter cream cheese frosting.
Oh my god, that's decadent.
It was decadent, and I made cupcakes leftover just for me. And get this, I also made a St. Louis butter cake.
Butter cake.
And it was delicious. And I've been giving out slices to neighbors. And I literally, which is so not me. That is not me. Before the pandemic, I was a recluse.
Yes.
If anything, the only signifier that I was like in the neighborhood was like a puff of weed smoke coming out my window. And they were like, there he is, that nasty, rotted girl.
A puff of weed smoke and like yelling.
And yelling, screaming, yes. Like screaming. A witch's cackle
yeah,
in the dead of the night. A banshee. But now I'm giving out little treaties and it feels so good. And that's now I have amazing. Cupcakes and like there are three little girls who live beside me and I'm like, they're getting those cupcakes.
That's really sweet. You really love kids.
I do love kids. That's I think really kids beautiful. Are hilarious. They kids are hilarious to me.
They are. And I just always think about how, you know, those adults you had growing up who just like took you seriously, even though you were just a little kid.
Yeah.
Like made you feel everything. Like a person.
Yes.
I think about those people and I'm like, I want to be that to somebody. Like, yeah. I want to be, yeah.
It really is special because it's so easy to be like, I mean, obviously kids can be annoying. Like,
they're
I'm not,
so fucking annoying.
I'm not here to not say that. Like, they are annoying.
They don't make sense like, also, yeah.
They don't make sense. And sometimes you really just have to, like, pretend to
yes.
be interested. But, like, it's so easy to be like, oh, get out of here, stinky little brat. But, like, it's when you really like take a minute to be like, okay, but like, what are they saying? Yes. It's actually kind of ridiculous. It's almost always ridiculous.
Yes. And you're like, it's okay. always ridiculous. I find myself missing like
childhood
daycare.
Daycare.
I miss it. I miss my daycare kids. Yeah. I'm going to delete that. Why am I talking about daycare? Like, it's been a year. It's been
one more shift. Yeah, one more shift at like the school I worked at. I would be like, bring me back into quarantine.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But what I miss is like being not, I mean, obviously, like I'm saying this because we're living in a global pandemic, but the structure of being in like a child in daycare or in school, yes. I kind of miss that. Like someone needs to tell me like, you need to sit down and read a book. Like I actually need that. Like
I need, yeah. Exactly. I'm not a self like motivated person. Like I need Virgo. A project. I need to be in group settings or like working for somebody. Like I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, I need there to be stakes. I need, even if like someone, if someone's threatening like punishment, mm-hmm. like that would be good. Like if someone's like, you better like finish this book and do some writing or else yes. you don't get your TV. Yes. I'd be like, oh shit, like I have to do it.
Oh my God, exactly. No, exactly.
But no one's doing that for me. I guess, and you know what I just realized? That's what being an adult is.
Exactly. And it sucks. Oh, no. I fucking hate it.
Oh no.
I can't do this anymore. I was thinking about getting a personal trainer because I don't exercise anymore. I used to just, because I had the structure of university, I'd wake up, go to the gym before my class, go to a yoga class before like lecture or whatever.
So chic.
And I don't do that anymore.
I love that you did that. You were that type of person in school. I was not. I was like waking up 5 minutes before my class, stumbling in.
I had bouts. I had bouts of being healthy. Oh my God, yeah. they're coming for me.
The sirens are finally coming. And guess what, Abba? I called them.
Oh no, Ben!
I always wanted to be my.
You traitor.
I did yoga twice.
Speaking of traitors.
Oh.
It's Easter weekend.
This oh my
is
God.
Weekend. This is classically Jesus said one of you will betray me.
And guess and it happened.
Look at you, Judas.
And it was me. I'm Judas.
Judas. Judas.
I love. Oh my God. This is a biblical podcast at its core.
I Why think do you so. Say that?
I think so because we represent I was about to say we represent good and evil. And that's biblical.
So I'm the good angel on the shoulder and you're and the I'm bad evil. Angel. And you Aiden's, always say that you're evil. I don't.
I'm chaotic. I think someone said I'm chaotic good.
You're chaotic good.
Like I am chaotic, but it'll be fine.
I think I'm like lawful neutral.
Lawful neutral, yes.
Like
I see that.
Yeah. Is that but a lawful, thing? Is that a category?
Lawful no, neutral. It is. Lawful yeah, neutral yeah. is, yes. And I think that's good. You know who else is a lawful neutral is Miranda from Sex and the City.
Oh.
The most okay. underrated. The most
You're
underrated.
Right. You're absolutely right. Interesting.
I love
Who else
Miranda.
Is a lawful neutral?
Toronto. No, Toronto's not lawful neutral.
Toronto's just full on evil.
Toronto is evil.
Yeah.
Toronto like made the chart. That's what Toronto like made it.
Toronto yeah. made the chart. Oh my God. Toronto doesn't make anything anymore no. other than condos.
Those glassy, so, glassies. Yeah. They're yeah, always so glassy.
Glassy?
Glassy. Like so much glass.
The glass condos?
Yeah, if someone like came to Toronto for the first time, it's so because like I grew up here, so like I see it.
Yes,
my Toronto is like Pape Station, like yes. that's what I see Toronto as. But like people see it as these buildings.
That's true.
That they must is think true. It's so pretty and like modern, and it's like no.
Well, that was always like the appeal for me. Like was always like Queen Street, like walking through the fashion oh, district. And like then like going on like a school trip and we go to like the AGO or something. Like the culture. And now the culture is gone. Like they're all our venues and shit like that. They don't exist anymore.
I know. It's actually so depressing how no theater I ever set foot in exists anymore.
No. We're gonna all move to Hamilton. We're all moving to Hamilton.
That could be fun. Or like what if we just like take over PEI? No, that would be sad.
You know what? Not to be like being in Halifax. Halifax was fun. It's like a small city.
Right.
And there are enough things to do there. And also it's COVID, so I didn't get the full experience. But I after being there for like 2 months, I've decided I can never live in a city that small full time.
Right.
It has yeah. to be like Toronto.
I feel yeah. I need to be like, I need to feel anonymous.
You yes.
know? Like I need to like, I want the feeling of going downtown, like seeing a movie by myself and like yeah. not a soul in the vicinity knows my name, but like in Halifax, yeah. like I feel like you spend enough time there, everyone's going to know your business.
Well, exactly. You get to know people, you get to know your neighbors and stuff like that. You see the same people yeah. every day, and everyone's very talkative in Halifax.
People in the East Coast are very polite. That's the thing, and they always say they're very polite. And it's true, the East Coast people yeah. like that we know in Toronto, Trisha Black comes to mind,
yes.
salt of the earth.
Yes.
Like these East Coasters are so nice, and they make me feel so ugly.
Well, that's the thing. They exactly. Yeah. They are so nice. Like one time, I was in line for Lush, yeah. and I would please no one talk to me. Like if anyone talks to me, I will explode. Like, I'm just riddled yeah. with anxiety being at a mall. It was the first time I went to the Halifax Shopping Center, and this girl standing in front of me just whips around immediately after I had that thought and was like, "This is all so crazy, right? Like, can you believe we're waiting in line? I guess it's for the best." And like went on a monologue. Like,
oh my god! So much. That is, and here's the thing. That to me is. That's not nice behavior. That to me is like we have our internal monologues, and that's yes. something we can keep inside.
That's your internal monologue that you need
but
to
she was yourself. Like someone else ought to hear this.
Yeah, that, exactly.
That is just too much exactly. for me. But then again, I've definitely been her. So
yeah,
for sure.
We've all been her.
You know who I want to be?
Who do you want to be, Ben?
Our guest. I've been really stealing your transition.
No, like, you did. You're wow. siphoning the transition energy.
I'm siphoning it because I've learned from the best.
You're doing great. You're doing great. But I'm so excited for the guests that we have on the show yes. today. Truly, like, we've been having some heavy hitters on the podcast.
You're
lately,
welcome, and, listeners.
Oh, she's yeah. no different. You definitely have seen her on Letterkenny. You've seen her in Ginny in Georgia.
Yes.
And she has a really big project coming out soon. I'm sure it'll be out by the time this pod is released. But take it away, Ben.
Oh, my God. Huge, huge. Okay, get this. Writer. Actress, mm-hmm. starring mm-hmm. actress in her own film, Sugar Daddy, which we saw earlier today.
Yes.
Incredible. It Beautiful. Comes out April 6th, correct. I believe. Our guest yes. is nodding her head. April 6th on wherever you rent movies, video on demand, VOD, mm-hmm. if you will, wherever you rent movies, iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, yes. I'm assuming, all that good stuff. Rent it. It's so good.
You can watch the trailer if you're curious to know what it's yes. about. You can watch the trailer on Paste. It's about a struggling musician who joins a paid dating website to make a living wage while making the music of her dreams. Like we said, watch it this morning. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Love it. Mm.
Truly, it's literally made for nostalgic listeners.
It's truly made for nostalgic listeners. So, without further ado, please welcome Kelly McCormack!
What up? Oh my. Hi. I have one. Hi. Like, guys, that intro was can you follow me everywhere? Because that was epic. I have one question though. Like, it's for you, Abba. Why were you in line at Lush? Like, why would you go? Like, I just need to know.
Too was wondering
like,
this.
I've only yeah. seen Lush at the Pearson International Airport, and I'm like, mm-hmm. my mind sort of darts over there because it all looks like fudge yes. and candy. And I'm like, yes. there's a part of me. Yeah. I'm also very triggered by random acts of rainbow. Mm-hmm. I just sort of see it. Yes. Like, I was the kind of person who was watching paint being mixed before it was cool. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to.
Yes.
Like find Ooh. YouTube videos of people mixing paint before it became like a sort mm-hmm. of like kind of creepy thing that young people yeah. watch where you're kind of like, yeah. is this also sort of yeah. about sex? Like, is this, are you going through puberty and you just want to see like yeah. stuff being touched and mixed and stuff,
being mixed.
But with sparkles?
The poking yeah, yeah, yeah. of the slime can feel very sexual.
Well, of course it
the
is.
The sensory Absolutely. Aspect of
but,
it. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But
yeah.
like, sorry, this is a deep nostalgic transition, but do you remember being 13 and sort of just... like having those sort your evolution is making you think of like squishiness and
yes,
liquids.
Yes.
And I think that's
yes.
what's going on with these kids these days watching rainbow
yeah.
goo. I'm like, this guy's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can tell
there's yes. something
so
very
primal.
Naturally,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very primal. It reminds me of like kids like playing and like we have sensory bins in kids' classrooms now. And it's always like the nastiest shit. But to watch them play with it, they're like they're really into it. It's like this primal urge to touch something slimy.
Yeah. And gross. And that's the reason why our species exists. If you think about it.
I mean, if you think of those videos of when they add the beads to the slime, I mean, is there a greater metaphor for the sperm and the egg?
There is not.
Truly. There is not. Like, it literally is. They're creating life. They're mini gods.
They're mini gods.
I just want to, I know for our listeners, they won't see it, but I want to add a prop to this conversation because I've gotten into beading. Yes. I literally have a bowl of rainbow beads that I just, maybe the listeners can hear me mixing it.
I love that. Oh my god.
But that's back to the.
Do you make jewelry?
Yeah. I mean, I make low key necklaces for myself.
Okay.
It was my first job when I was like 6 or 7, and then I made a lot of money because I beaded for people, and then people would buy it. I think out of being like, oh, that's so cute. She made a necklace. But then I made a lot of money. And then my mom had to like curtail it because she was like, how much money did you make? I'm like, I have $500.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Oh my God.
You were a businesswoman.
I was a businesswoman from a young age, an entrepreneur. I had lots of, I always talk about my career as like a series of crafts. I'm like, I don't know, guys. I just make crafts because people are like, are you a writer? Are you a director? Yeah. Are you an actor? Are you a this? I'm like, I'm an artist. I like crafts.
Yeah.
But let's not like, I just want to go back to why you go to Lush. Like, what does one buy there?
So the only reason I walked into Lush, I have never like really bought a Lush product really before that moment. But it was my first time in Halifax and I was wrapping up my like, my time at 22 minutes is like my trial period. Mm-hmm. And the writers had been like so instrumental in like making me comfortable and like helping me with my ideas. So I was like, I have to get them a gift. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck to get them, but I know that they're stressed out all the time. So I just bought a bunch of the bath bombs.
Those are good. Okay. It's just the smell is so offensive that I would never.
It's so strong.
I've never had a bath bomb. What is that experience? Oh, I know that it fizzes.
It's not good for your pussy. That's what I mean.
Interesting.
It's like Epsom salts that have been hard packed. I think this might be fake news, but it's Epsom salts packed into a ball. And then when you put it in the bath, it fizzes and it's very exciting. And if you like
pretty. Lots of colors.
Yeah, lots of colors. It's sort of, you know, I don't know if it's like really worth all the hype, but
no.
I just love, it looks like a witchy like cauldron, like someone dropping like a little magical potion.
That's the fun of it. It's like a very, back to the sensory. Yeah. It's like very childish, but for adults.
Yeah.
It's like, exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited for what we're going to talk about today because I feel like this is the first time where, other than Robert Glasper maybe, but even Robert Glasper's episode, I feel like I knew the people he had produced for. This is like the first time we're talking about an artist and I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. Like, I don't know much about them. So I'm excited for you to talk about why you like this artist, how you listen to them, when you found them out. And I'll let you take it away and introduce who we're talking about.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Me? Oh, we are talking about possibly the greatest rock band of all time. Definitely the most instrumental and influential and foundational musician for me growing up, which was Pink Floyd. The psychedelic, like expansive, you know, multi-instrumentalist band of what was once five people, Syd Barrett, Roger Waters, Nick Mason, Richard Wright, and later David Gilmour. And then Syd Barrett famously left, and then it was just the four dudes. And then they famously made a shit ton of really awesome music and then broke up. Pink Floyd were sort of like, this is going to sound really stupid, but like the kind of the soundtrack of my, I don't want to say the soundtrack of my life, but you know, I grew up singing musical theater and opera and studying classical music. And I started classical music when I was really young, like 7. And so I was singing all these like folk songs and art songs and arias and Italian music. And my dad had like, just like, 10 records that every time I went to his house, it was like he had this beautiful old 80s record player, and he had, you know, mm-hmm. Peter Frampton and the Police, and but he had tons of Pink Floyd records. So it was really like an initial way to sort of connect with him and kind of, mm-hmm. and he had these cool earphones, you know, when you're young, the earphones really feel like yes. just massive on your head. You're just yes. like holding onto yeah. them. Like,
yeah.
So I started listening to Pink Floyd, and it really felt, like the same kind of world as classical music, because it's so instrumental, and they'll let songs mm-hmm. play for like 15 right. minutes, and songs like records like Metal and Pulse and The Wall and Dark Side and all these like famous, you know, and Wish You Were Here. Like they all feel so different. So each one of them feels like a journey. Mm-hmm. But then I started listening to them in high school as I was like a musical theater nerd and a synchronized swimmer mm-hmm. nerd and a Pink Floyd nerd. It made no sense. And, but in high school, it was like people who listened to Pink Floyd were druggies. It was like you. Mm-hmm. So when I would say I loved Pink Floyd, people would assume that I was like, I smoked weed a bunch, which I have nothing against. I grew up in Vancouver. I had full access, but because I was like training in classical music, I didn't touch it. So in my high school, it sort of had this like psychedelic, you know, vibe. And then as mm-hmm. I got older, so I sort of stopped listening to it in high school because it was sort of seen as like, I don't know, like you listen to Beavis and Butthead, you watch Beavis and Butthead, you listen yes. to Pink Floyd, and
right.
you know, it was just this kind of bro weed culture that I really didn't like yeah. and didn't want to be yeah. a part of. So mm-hmm. I stopped listening to it and then discovered it again in my early 20s, and I named my dog Floyd, who as you'll see from my my Zoom handle, Floyder Films is the name.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Full circle.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Whoa, I didn't even realize that until just yeah. now. That's so cool.
So Floyd, wow. Pink Floyd has always been, I mean, there's two conversations I have about it. Like, number one, it's always mm-hmm. been this huge inspiration for me, especially, mm-hmm. But you know, they're a band of all dudes with huge egos mm-hmm. who made, you know, a lot of like, fuck you music, which... You know, mm-hmm. and there's some more gentle stuff like Vera and Mother are probably two of my favorite tracks. Wish You Were Here, I think, is one of the greatest songs ever written. Mm-hmm. Like if you just look at the lyrics, they'll make you weep. But mm-hmm. When I was making this film, and so much of the film is about performative gender and yes. how a woman sort of like has an exorcism of her femininity and then gets on stage and has this very masculine, like chest bare mm-hmm. to the audience. I've always been really jealous of, I mean, it's been a constant theme in my life, but you know, as someone who dresses and kind of identifies as a teenage boy in the 90s, it's, I always, you know, there's this point with musicians where they get on stage and these men like, mm-hmm. you know, Freddie Mercury and Iggy Pop and Prince and Pink Floyd, like they just take yes. off their shirts and they're sweaty yes. and they're angry right. and they're like, yeah, fuck yeah, you. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and that really was where I wanted to, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but that's where I kind of when I wanted to end up. So
yes,
Pink Floyd was a huge inspiration. Yeah. And also bands like that really have the balls to like take up space. Like they'll write a 16 minute mm-hmm. track. And there's not a lot of right. female musicians who did that and who are allowed to do
that's
that.
True.
And it's like the balls mm-hmm. of just being like, I'm going to make noise for a cool 16 minutes and there's not going to be any mm-hmm. lyrics and y'all are going to friggin' mm-hmm. listen because we're Pink fucking Floyd. So
yeah,
tapping into that, I sort of rejected it in high school a little bit because it was too bro heavy. And now I source it as like a source of power to say like I can mm-hmm. so yeah, so Darren in the film, the musician, is not only mm-hmm. a musician, but she's like, you know, a producer, and she's writing mm-hmm. the music, and it's all expansive and it's multi, and she plays the pedal steel, which famously David Gilmour plays, and all that stuff. So that's sort of like the broad strokes intro of Pink Floyd, but we can get into the more like mm-hmm. but it's having
no definitely
they're having yeah. a, you know, like they're the young kids these days are discovering Pink Floyd, you know?
Yes. I think it's so interesting how, like, it's such a seminal piece of, like, adolescence is for just not in the media, but, like, just in real life is kids discovering, like, Pink Floyd. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what the connection is. Like, obviously, like you said, they're very, like, fuck you. They're taking up space. You know, when you're a kid, you're angsty and that speaks to you. But I wonder if, like, that kind of, like, ambient music where they're, like, playing, but there are no lyrics and they're playing for, like, 16 minutes mm-hmm. or whatever on end. If there's, like, a connection with just, like, it being soothing to, like, teenagers, there's something, there has right. to be something there.
100%. Right? Like, if you listen to, which is why I, you know, I sort of rejected and disliked, but didn't have the words for when it mm-hmm. was kind of seen as just psychedelic music to get high to when I was yeah. in high school. Mm-hmm. Because if you listen to, like, a record like metal, that is quite mm-hmm. literally a record you're supposed to put on and kind of try and fall asleep to, I think. I think you're supposed to soothe yourself, and it's like, you know, a pillow of winds is and echoes. They're all like lullabies. And mm-hmm. yeah, I hope that I hope teens are finding it and also not just getting high to it, which is still yeah. a good time, but yeah, you know, yeah. Soothing and whatnot. But you know, it's so funny because I was watching Ginny and Georgia, the show that I'm yes. on, and in the first scene, I think Ginny's wearing like a Pink Floyd t-shirt.
No yeah. way!
And I was like,
oh my god, I love that.
Yeah, I think it's actually having it's like a nice. Yeah, I think it's having a. I think I mean, every awesome band or like awesome music mm-hmm. is going to be found. Like mm-hmm. Joni Mitchell is another mm-hmm. god in my world. Yes. And yes. I don't think that there will be a generation that doesn't discover her. That doesn't.
No.
Right. Nah.
And I think I've had totally. Some of the most beautiful experiences with Joni Mitchell playing in the background. Like, there's something very, like, ethereal about these artists that you're naming that provide, like, not only just, like, musically, like, good music, but, like, a landscape. Mm-hmm. When I was in high mm-hmm. school, I was, like, obsessed with, like, romanticizing my life because I grew up in Brampton. It was so boring. I was just yeah. so bored constantly that I had to, like, romanticize small, like, things, like, driving in, like, the backwoods of like Caledon with friends and like Joni Mitchell would be on and we'd be like, it's like an indie movie, like there's like a search for like
yeah,
you know
yeah, yeah.
for like totally. A sense of attachment or whatever. But I'm really curious to know, like, how has Pink Floyd like influenced your own music writing or like your own production, like not just like musically, but like also like emotionally, like mm-hmm. what have you gotten from that?
Well yeah. coming up through opera and musical theater and classical music, there, this is a line from a song in the film Sugar Daddy, but there is mm-hmm. this sort of, you're being trained to please. You have to, I grew mm-hmm. up as a soprano.
Okay.
You're mm-hmm. trying to hit those high notes. You're trying to make your voice mm-hmm. super high. You're trying to be perfect. You want to be mm-hmm. emblematic of what it sounds like to sing this type of old classical music written by a bunch of dead old white guys. Like you're 10 years old and being like, this is right. And yes. I'm all about another, I'm dropping lines from the film because I mean, again, I can't avoid the fact that the film sort of came out of my body. So, you know, it's like, yes. it's like, yes, you're trying course. To do it. Amanda Bruegel, who's in the film, who plays mm-hmm. this incredible record label head. And she gives Darren okay, this yeah, advice. Yeah. And she says like, I can hear your training and you're good, but yes. you're trying to do it right. And all other people care about is how far you're willing to take it to do it wrong. Yeah. I love I can drop these lines because I'm like, I wrote that, that's bitch, cool. so I can.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
I can say it. That's knowledge. I was like, here's some yeah. word perfect quotes.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think Pink Floyd has always been like the antithesis or like the polarized version of how I was being trained. So when I was, mm-hmm. you know, singing at the Kiwanis music festivals and singing like, and like singing like perfect, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. I was going mm-hmm. home and listening to this grimy, ethereal.
Oh my god, I love that imagery.
Yeah.
You know what I mm-hmm. picture? You know how there's like that always that archetype in like a teen movie or a show where there's like the good girl, but she gets to school and she like changes into like yeah. her bad girl clothes. That's yeah. you, but with music.
Yeah.
Like
you're yes.
Like, it was a.
You like take an opera record, throw it in the garbage. You're headbanging. You're absolutely headbanging in your room.
Yeah, it's so it's true. Incredible. It's like, and it really yeah. felt, you know, it was an expression of, I related a lot to the masculine feeling of these men singing. Mm-hmm. And even Roger Waters singing about his mother in the song Mother felt more honest to me than I think. And just like expressions of gender and performative gender, like I felt them very deeply. Yeah. And then I quit opera and I moved to New York and like moved into experimental theater and experimental musical theater, where I was like naked on stage, like dumping black ink on my body, and my mom was in the front row just being like, I'm glad I'm glad all those music lessons paid off. I don't know. So
that's incredible.
It's Pink Floyd has always pushed me to just like not give a fuck, because clearly these guys don't give a fuck. But you know, they came from such an incredible amount of privilege. Like even as much as they were, you know, just broke dudes living in England, they still are two white. They're four, five white guys who, at a time period, this was like, this is what people wanted, was just bros and getting together, making a band. And and I think that's why I rejected it a little bit in high school, because like I hated that. I hated the like that white bro band culture. It's just like
Totally.
Absolutely. I really love what you're speaking to here, because I relate to it so much, especially in high school, where like I genuinely did not my mom just called.
Hey mom.
Oh, there you go. Like, leave me alone.
You're on the pod.
In high school, it was very much this thing where, like, growing up, my parents were very obsessed with, like, respectability culture and, like, you know, like, making sure that you're prim and proper, but, like, not just for the sake of, like, you know, being a woman, but also, like, as a black woman, like, respectability politics are such a big thing. So, like, music, like, similar to Pink Floyd, but also things more, like, current at the time, like System of a Down and, like, Billy Talent and stuff like that, Alexis on Fire. Listening to that, it was, like, this very... There's this masculine energy that, like, I attach myself to. I mean, I didn't know I was non-binary then, but, like, that masculine energy, it, like, it speaks to something in feminine people who are forced to have to be feminine.
100%.
It's, like, that audacity to stay on stage and play for 16 minutes, the audacity to just make noise, like, that is something that's so masculine, and it feels so detached from, like, a black woman's experience. But listening to bands like Pink Floyd, it, like... It truly awakens another, like, not to be corny, not to be weird.
Be corny.
We're ready.
It awakens a dimension in you that's absolutely. Like, oh, like, this performance of gender is truly just a performance.
I think it's really interesting what you're both saying about how, like, you both did not subscribe to, like, the white bro culture that was, like, affiliated with Pink Floyd, but both of you were able to, like, recontextualize Pink Floyd and, like, make it, like, your own thing. Like, that is really cool, and that's special, because, like, I feel like a lot of that genre, like, the culture takes up so much space where it's also, it's almost like you can't, it's like I can't even get to the music, because, like, I'm just focused on, like, am I liking this enough to pass for straight as, like, a kid? Like, you know what I mean? Or, like, do, like, you see, like an Urban Outfitters t-shirt with Dark Side of the Moon. Like, I see other boys wearing this. Yeah. Like, maybe I'll get, like, and I just think it's cool that, like, that music does, like, it exists as, like, artwork that's, like, for anybody who wants to consume it. But, like, it's interesting how, like, so much of, like, popular music, it's, like, defined by the fandom. Like, the people who are like, this is me, and, like, this speaks to, like, my experience. And it's like, okay, but you could be, like, Kelly in BC being an opera queen, also loving Pink Floyd. But it's, like, that's you don't see that represented in, like, what they're putting out or whatever.
It's so true. And, like, other bands you mentioned... System of the Down and Nine Inch Nails and Tool and like all those I was into all of that, and it's like the audacity of making noise was a constant thing myself and Foxtrot, who wrote the music for my film, returned to being like the audacity of making noise and the audacity of making all the noise, like being in control of the producing and writing and being multi-instrumentalist. Like, that was a big, because the bro culture behind bands like Pink Floyd, I think there's a plane, the bro culture is so like, you know, well, what instrument do you play? And like, do you know all the facts? Like, I know every word of every Pink Floyd song, but I don't know much about these guys. And yet, there is such a obsession with knowing like the biography details of musicians. And yes. that's a very like, yeah. I've had like guys like try and school me on like how much I know about Pink Floyd. And I'm like, I don't give a classic. Fuck. I was like, who cares when yeah. they broke up and the sort of like, yeah. the reverie and, mm-hmm. like the respect and the, like the, around the story of Syd Barrett and all that. Mm-hmm. It's, mm-hmm. There is this sort of fetishization or like veneration of the tortured young musician yes. who ultimately totally. Maybe, you know, mm-hmm. Sadly, but struggles with depression and this and, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and as you said, like as someone also who at the time didn't identify as non-binary or mm-hmm. non-conforming, because those words like didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're seeking yeah. These performances of masculinity that we might have access to. And I also think mm-hmm. one of the reasons I was attracted to Pink Floyd is that it's also deeply androgynous. Like it's also mm-hmm. a bunch of, as much as I really related to the audacity of them making noise, some of the music, especially on the record Metal, mm-hmm. is very sensitive and very feminine mm-hmm. and very like
yeah.
gentle. And I don't know. And that's why it reminded me of classical music. So mm-hmm. as much as I loved finding myself through them and exploring masculinity through them, I also really mm-hmm. loved listening to all these bros singing mm-hmm. a song like Mother, where he's singing,
yeah.
you know. So it's a, yeah. I can't think of like a better, if I had a kid or if I was like around
mm-hmm.
young kids or teenagers or whatever, and I was like, all right,
yeah.
can I give you something? I don't know how problematic, there's probably a bunch of like problematic lyrics in there.
Always.
But as yeah. far as like just like blatant sexism goes, I think they do kind of okay. Like I don't think any of yeah. them dated anyone actually. I think like none of them had relationships, so they had no women to sort of like shit on. Well, it's like, you know.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's how you're like, okay, yeah. you have had too many yeah. relationships and so you're, you talk.
You're shitting on women through your track.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So is it safe to say that Metal is your favorite record of theirs?
Man. I mean, I would say, I don't know. Wish You Were Here, I think, is... That mm. that song, Wish You Were Here, is up there with Cactus Tree by Joni Mitchell as, like, the two greatest songs mm-hmm. ever written, in my opinion. But, again, it mm-hmm. is... Going back to bro culture, it's such a bro culture thing to make lists of songs and be like, what's the best? Yes. And this is the top 10. And yeah. I'm just like, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. It's all brilliant. So I love yeah. the song yeah. Wish You Were Here, The Wall, mm-hmm. as a concept album. If you want to just sit down and, mm-hmm. like, listen start to finish. Like, it's the one everyone mm-hmm. talks about, maybe besides Dark Side. But, like, you just can't go wrong with The Wall. Like, just sit and start to finish. Like, the song Run Like Hell is like one of the best tracks yes. to work out to if you really right. want to run like yes. hell. Mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm. Echoes and Metal, yeah. Echoes, the song mm-hmm. on Metal. I don't know, it's too hard. They're all sort of,
it is hard.
It is yeah. hard. Yeah, it's hard. And also, like, okay, what I'm gleaning, because I'm not a Pink Floyd girl, but like what I'm kind of gleaning is like Dark Side is like, if you like Dark Side, if that's your favorite, is that kind of like you're not a real Pink Floyd?
I mean,
is that what people would say?
Is that the thing? Is that the thing?
Sort of. I would, I don't know. Yeah. It's, you might think that until you sit and listen to Dark Side, and then you're like, okay. Shit.
Yeah. You're like, I yeah. get it.
Oh, okay. Like, okay. There's just there is nothing you can say against Dark Side. There's just nothing. It is,
right.
I saw Roger Waters perform Dark Side in 2008. I saw him perform The Wall wow. 7 times in like 7 different countries. And
oh my God.
Wow. Dark Side, wow. like Comfortably Numb, if you want to talk, like Comfortably Numb is probably their most, I mean, maybe, like probably their most famous song from Dark Side.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. maybe, or is that from, is Comfortably Numb? Now I'm getting confused. Maybe it's On the Wall. See, this is, I'm going to get like canceled by the bro culture. They're like, she doesn't even know which record Comfortably Numb is on.
They don't listen. So you're safe here.
Yeah, they don't listen. They don't listen. Yeah.
But I would say like Comfortably Numb is probably their most famous song. But if you, mm-hmm. if you really listen to it, it does capture like the teenage angst of being like dumped mm. with hormones and wanting to like cancel it all okay. and just sort of like mm. feel things in a straight line and using drugs mm-hmm. to sort of mitigate all the various like, you know, tensions in your life. it, and then this, it's like, it's perfect. The dark side is perfect. Mm-hmm. The wall is perfect. I mean, so yeah, but the, maybe there is like a, if you wear like a dark side t-shirt, which is just the prism and the rainbow, maybe it's like, you've maybe never listened to Pink Floyd, but also that, also that record, as someone as I said, obsessed with rainbow, is, I mean, a good record cover.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. Aesthetically, it's,
I must say, this just made me think of it. The poster for your movie is gorgeous.
Yes.
That painting is so cool. I mean, I'm, listeners should know, I'm on Letterboxd now. Follow me on Letterboxd at Girly Pearly. And when saw that post, because I love just, I love seeing movie posters. They're so pretty. Mm-hmm. When a movie poster is good, it's great. And I we rarely see like a painting for a poster. Yes. And I think it's so cool and
classy. Who was the artist?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, I can't wait to say this. But her name is Hélène Delmer. She's from Paris. Mm. She's a famous Parisian painter. And she is also the painter responsible for all the paintings in the film Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Shut the front door.
Yeah, so that's amazing. That was her hand painting in the film. And before she worked on Portrait of Lady on Fire, about 5 years ago, her paintings, I was following her on Instagram, and her paintings were in early references of the film. She does these incredible portraits of women, and then she sort of redacts their eyes or their mouth or whatever. And it's like, I really think it captures the sort of tension of the female experience, where it's like, you're looking beautiful and you're in this portrait, and then it's just like, wah, and she wipes up, wipes away the eyes. So I had a bunch of her paintings in early drafts of like the film's lookbooks and like reference materials. And so did our costume designer and so did our production designer. Like, we all had her paintings. And then when we were trying to think of what to do for the poster, and I wanted to just do something really extra and really like classical, but modern at the same time, I reached out to her, and then that's when I saw that she had in fact painted all the paintings for Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and I lost my goddamn mind. So I sent her a very impassioned email telling her about the film. I sent her that private link, and the same private link that you guys got, and then she watched it, and she was like, I love the film. There's such a beautiful rage. I'll paint this painting. And then I did a little photo shoot with my phone in alone in like the woods in BC. And then she painted my frigging face.
That is amazing. So cool. Oh my God. That is like, wow.
That's incredible.
I know.
That's God.
Portrait of the Lady on Fire, one of my favorite films, period, that's come out recently. It's just so good. But will you ever get like the
actual painting?
Original?
Well, the actual painting? We commissioned her to paint the painting, but because the film is all about like female ownership and people and women like owning their own art and being the producer and the instrumentalist and the music, it was sort of like I wanted her to be able to monetize the experience more. I think the painting is yours. You can sell it. You can do whatever you want with it. And she can sell prints for it as well. So she might do that, but I don't know. I told her, I was like, maybe just wait for my career to sort of like, I was like, if you want to sell, I'm like, maybe my career like sort of like moves in a direction where this will be a little more, valuable, but, or just keep it. I don't know.
You're steadily on your way. Oh my God. No, like it seems like it's been like a very busy few years for you. Like your IMDb is stacked, but also
going off
just watching the film, it feels like, a culmination of a lot of hard work. So I think it's like a perfect time to start, maybe talking about the film a bit, but like, I'm really curious, like, how do you even begin working on a project this big?
Kelly,
like how?
Especially because like just getting to know you a little bit through this right now, it seems like you're saying too, like there's so many facets of like your artistry in this movie. Like there's visual art, there's music, there's you wrote it, you're acting in it. It's like you put so much of your soul into this movie, it seems.
Yeah.
So like,
is this the truth? I mean, I think what you're talking about, the catalyst, the inception, the door into the project is what mm-hmm. writers struggle with the most, because you might have ideas swarming around in your brain, but the moment where you light the match and you get in there mm-hmm. Is kind of an ephemeral, confusing, elusive thing that you chase your entire life. But mm-hmm. yeah, I when I wrote this film, I was in a very different situation. I wrote it 5 years ago, and I hadn't really worked in film that much. I was just working in theater. I had so many part-time jobs. I was working as a caterer mm-hmm. full-time and at a boutique, and I was a babysitter, and I worked at a dental office, and I wow. was auditioning for commercials, and I had just booked a Slim Jim commercial, and I got paid like $2,000. And I had yeah. this idea in my head, and I was feeling like just a lot of rage, a lot of like, mm-hmm. I'm never gonna punch through. I experienced so much like sexual commodification in various ways mm-hmm. in all my different part-time jobs. Like, you'll notice in the beginning of the film, I'm wearing like a mm-hmm. Japanese style catering dress that you see women wearing mm-hmm. at the Shangri-La. And as someone mm-hmm. whose gender has always been this like very confusing thing, and not really feeling authentically female or a woman, but mm-hmm. knowing that people treat me like a woman, yes. it was very disorienting. Like I had a bag of clothes mm-hmm. that were different versions of femininity for different jobs. Mm-hmm. And I was working like 10-hour days and coming home and then being mm-hmm. like, I give everything away to everybody else. I give yes. everything away yes. to the woman who is, you know, she was lovely, but like mm-hmm. the woman running the boutique and the guy who's starting the new catering mm-hmm. company. And you know, I'm giving mm-hmm. it to everyone else's passion project. So I booked that Slim Jim money and yes. I quit my job. And I essentially like locked myself in my apartment. And my apartment is 400 square mm-hmm. feet. Of like one room. It's a one room apartment. And I wrote the mm-hmm. film in a cabin fever of anger and like sort of a kaleidoscope of influences. And I wrote it over mm-hmm. the course of 3 months. And then the mm-hmm. film went under like 78 drafts over the 5 years mm-hmm. since then. But that initial sort of like dark energy that went into it and all the sort of, yeah. you know, the moments when you write stuff and you don't know why you're writing it and your subconscious is coming through. And that's when things that have mm-hmm. soaked my subconscious, like Pink Floyd and like the conversations of performative gender and through music mm-hmm. and through art and through clothing, that's when those things sort of, there's a drill. I'm gonna shut the door, but I can still talk because these are wireless headphones. Okay, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes!
Okay,
you guys are coming outside. ASMR.
That background is so pretty.
ASMR. And she back. But yeah, that's how that kind of came about. But it's interesting because, you know, I wasn't where I am now. Like, I didn't have any IMDb credits. I was a big, mm-hmm. fat nobody. And it was interesting because like I wrote the film to say like, oh, this is my film, I'm gonna star in it, but like at the time I certainly had no business to do that, where now I feel like I could we're just trying to improve the quality, the value of Mary Helene's painting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what it's for.
I feel like you're very much speaking to that audacity, that like the audacity of noise, like the audacity like that Pink Floyd and like just that bro culture of like that type of music has. Like mm-hmm. your character is very audacious in the film to like make produce mm-hmm. your own music, produce your own videos, like, and just that audacious moment at the end. I don't want to spoil anything, mm-hmm, but it's like you're coming up out of like all those different versions of yourself, mm-hmm. all those different versions of femininity, like a visualized version of all those different outfits of femininity that you had to carry around, and like very triumphantly, like, you know, bare chested and like wearing masculine clothing, like, it's audacious as fuck.
Woo-hoo!
And I think it's such a very interesting line between, you know, wanting to kind of not accepting that audacity initially because it's so bro, but then internalizing it as your own. But I think the most audacious aspect is the music production, because a lot of women are getting into producing their own music, because classically women are always shut out of that. So can you tell me a bit, like, what was it like? How much did you work with the person who, like, created the music? What were the steps?
I mean, I love the audacious as fuck is like my new favorite. also I just text my neighbor in the woods to be like, yo, can you maybe not saw right now? Just so you know, while you were talking, I was like, hey neighbor, I know that you're rebuilding your porch, but could you chill?
I'm a big deal. I'm doing an interview.
I'm on Nostalgic. Exactly. Okay.
Yeah. Turns out your neighbor's a huge Nostalgic fan. He's like, oh my God. Tell I'm Ben so and sorry. Ab I say hi. My God. I'm so sorry. He gives you the saw. He's like, take it.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yeah. Okay. So the last 3 minutes of the film, I won't give it away, but as you said, like, it is, so Foxtrot, Marie-Hélène Delorme, she is an incredible, amazing Montreal-based musician who makes very, she writes her own music, produces her own tracks, releases her own masters, all that stuff. I read in the writing of the production, I read this article with Bjork, where she was saying how she's like made a million records. She's Bjork. I mean, no need to. She's friggin' Bjork. And she was talking about how she literally has to take photos of herself producing, like, at her computer and release and gives them to her manager, because the stories on, you know, different outlets are often like Bjork's new record produced by this guy. And she's like, no one believes that I am an auteur, that I am. Oh, they're nailing.
Oh my God.
Oh, now they're banging.
No worries. I can't really hear
it. I can't hear it. That is so frustrating to hear, because it's like, if someone like Bjork, who has such an individual sound, if they can't believe Bjork's not producing her own work, like,
I know.
There's no hope.
But it's not that they don't believe it. It's just that, like, certain music outlets, because blah, 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 patriarchy, blah, 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 10,000 years of sexism, they want to do these profiles on these male producers who sort of bring out the genius that is Bjork,
the artistry,
and you see that a lot with directors as well, like male directors in the film industry. You'll see in outlets they'll say things like, the male director brought out this performance by this woman, and I'm like, buddy, I brought that shit out to myself, and you helped me, but like, you didn't I wasn't just this like blobby, untalented, like mess of a single celled organism, and then you just like formed me. But that's the narrative around auteurism and women. So so what I wanted to explore is like how a woman becomes auteur, and focuses on like, you know, structuring her voice and having absolute autonomy on that. So when I was talking, so the process with MH over we wrote the music over 2.5 years, and it involved me lugging my pedal steel out to Montreal on the train. I was just like on that Via Rail every weekend for like 2 years. And a pedal steel is like so fucking heavy. It's like, it's so fucking heavy. And I'd go out there, and it was us having these conversations, talking about the audacity of making noise, talking about Pink Floyd. We talked a lot about Celine Dion as well. Like, we talked a lot about It's All Coming Back to Me Now, and like how that song with Meatloaf she did is like just this amazing, epic, like
such a good song.
Musically, such a journey. And and it's so like, good. You know, it's all about like her and Meatloaf, and you're kind of like, all right, but also Celine. And so we talked about that. And so in the last song, I said to my team, I was like, I want MH, I want Foxtrot to write like a 3-minute track, like a big ass beefy thing, which has been nominated for a CSA. And
congrats. That's
congratulations.
Huge.
Thank you.
I mean, it's all her. She wrote the song, but I just sang it. But she it's really cool. So we wanted to make noise, and then and then I sort of wrote out this like treatment for that last period, that last sequence of the film, that would be this like excavation of the feminine and the masculine, and then sort of landing at this persona. Because I don't think I'm giving this away, but the film is about not a rise to fame. It's not like there's no audience clapping for Darren. It's the year before. Yes. So where the film ends is where Darren's career begins. So I think it's like she makes this last track, and then it's like this is her first foray into the industry. And this persona, this the outfit and the silhouette she ends up with is a summary of the journey she just went on. So when you look at like, you know, Prince or David Bowie and these iconic androgynous gods, you're kind of like, how did you end up with this vibe? Like, where does this come from? And so I wanted to deconstruct that and go, all right, so if she ends up at the end of the film with the black glove and the, you know, whatever, all the stuff that I won't give away, but people might see in the trailer. I wanted to investigate how you arrived there. And that's the song that she, The Timid, Joyous, Atrocious is the song she puts out.
Wow. That's great. Well, I mean, the costumes and like the, all of that stuff in the movies, great. Like that blue dress, iconic.
Oh, iconic.
Truly iconic.
I will. Do you mean on top of the car?
Yes.
So that, gorgeous. So costume designer Mara Ziegler, who's an absolute god and one of the raddest pioneers of like feminist costume design in Toronto. She's worked on so much cool stuff. She did a film called Mouthpiece and a film called Firecrackers, and she's just done like really rad, diverse, feminist, like gender interesting kind of work. So we were trying to isolate the various female silhouettes that are sort of commodified and like expected of women. So there's the fallen woman in the red dress, which is like classical portraiture, letter red, like that Emma Stone movie, letter A.
Easy A.
It's like that all comes from like the woman in red is like the, you know, the quote unquote slut or the whore or the woman who's like a prostitute. And then, and then the blue dress is the opposite. It's like the Virgin Mary on top of the car, the Pietà, like the this Happy Easter, everyone. Because I heard it. Sorry,
Happy Easter.
I just want. I heard in the intro that this is a deeply religious show, and it's really the core. It is.
This is our Easter. This is our Easter
episode. So like, shout out to Virgin Mary. Thank you for
Virgin Mary.
Thank you for pressure. You know, thanks Bible for pressurizing women to be virgins for their whole life, and it ruined. Ruining our lives. So
we have a lot to thank the Bible for.
There's a,
a lot.
This is our, you know, this is our betrayal episode of Happy Easter. Shout out to Carl. I really honestly thought you guys were going to start talking about Jesus Christ Superstar, which is another huge monster influence for me. So I was like, well, Carl Anderson playing Judas, like I met him. He was really intense. I met him because
explained the story.
I met him because he was doing, he did a revival where he like reprised the role like 20 years later. And it's actually kind of a funny story because he's a musical theater god because he performs the greatest, like, he's fucking Carl Anderson. So we go to the stage door, and normally I don't do this because I'm all about, like, I'm your colleague, you know? trying to, like, not get too fangirl about it because I'm, like, one day. But I did for Carl. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to say to him, like, blah, 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 you're inspiring or whatever. I didn't even think about it. And as I was, like, walking to Carl, who came out of the backstage with this, like, huge cross on, and I was like,
oh my God.
And I came out, and as I was like, and you know, Carl Anderson has since passed away, so rest in peace, but I'm not talking shit about him, he is a god, but this moment was like an absolute moment of like, okay, I understand. So I walk out, I go to talk to him, and as I do this, some woman like passes in front of me and puts her hand on his shoulder, and she was like, you are a gift from God, like the Bible says this. And then they got into this like crazily intense biblical conversation, and like Carl was like literally being like the Lord says this and all this stuff, and so is she, and I was like, I don't feel like I have a place here.
You slowly back up.
I did
slowly tiptoeing away.
I was just like, thanks Carl, because I didn't, you know, because the show is religious, but like it doesn't mean that everyone participates in it is like like is like living for the Bible, but he was living for the Bible. And no shade to Carl Anderson. I just was like, I felt ill-equipped. I was like, I don't know how to
Absolutely. You're like, I don't know any psalms. Yeah. I don't know anything. Yeah. It was just,
and like the two of them were just like, they had both of their hands on either of their shoulder. And it was this whole moment. And I was not ready. I was really just going to say something like, you're awesome. You inspired me my whole life.
Yeah.
And he, and this woman's dropping like hymns and shit. I was like, fuck, I gotta get out of here.
Yeah.
Oh my Sorry. God.
You didn't know that like Christianity had to be a prerequisite.
Yeah.
To
I was like, what? Jesus Christ Superstar is about God? No, it's not. Right? No way.
Like
that show is not about Jesus. Come on.
It's so freaking funny. I watched it in my religion class. I went to a Catholic school.
Oh, wow.
And we watched it in our religion class, and it was so funny because it is like it is just a retelling of Jesus Christ's like story, except in a very 70s
it's a banger
way. Yes, yeah. Huge banger. And my religion teacher would keep pausing it and being like, people thought this part was satanic because it's an actor's like actors warming up and they thought it was like a cult ritual, but this is actually very religious, blah, 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 blah.
They're playing Zip Zap Zop.
Basically, and people apparently thought it was religious, but I remember watching that in high school being like, this is the gayest shit.
It's so
That's the thing, it seems so baffling to me that he'd be so religious. I'm like, dude, you work in musical theater.
Yeah. I know, exactly. And the homoeroticism between Carl Anderson and Ted Neely, who plays Jesus, when they're holding and he's like, they're like, it is.
Yes, it's hot.
It's so hot. And like, those were moments, you know, when I was like young watching this being like, nah, I'm not straight. Because it was like, you're just like, oh, please touch each other longer. And like, look at them looking at each other. And so it's funny because that I didn't have much like religion Bible stuff growing up. So that was my first introduction to the Bible. So I always thought that Judas and Jesus were like together. I always thought that they were like sort of like kind of because Jesus is all upset, the betrayal, because this is the betrayal episode. We're talking about the betrayal of Judas.
Yes, of course. Thank
and
you.
So it's like he, you know, betrays him with a kiss. And I was like, okay, so
he's gay.
What's I didn't know that. And then when I, you know, went to university and was studying art history and I was like, So Judas is not Carl Anderson, and they aren't gay.
Yes.
But I choose to believe, which is what I think religion's all about.
That is, you should have like, exactly. You should have like put your hand up in the lecture, like, I have a question.
Yeah. So is Judas and Jesus not together? I actually thought they were a gay couple for most of my life.
That is beautiful.
I know.
I truly wonder if that's like, that was a big part in the, what shaped you as a human.
100%.
Is just knowing, because like we're inundated with religious subtext on a daily basis. So I feel like having the headcanon that you've established in your mind of that they're gay, maybe this is what turned you into the gorgeous artist that you are.
Thank you. I mean, I was always like watching, like speaking of performative gender, like on the other, like, you know, like the Disney movies and all that crap. It's like, I was always watching that stuff, but I was always seeing like gay behavior behind it. And so like the hottest thing in the world to me was Ursula cosplaying as hot Ariel with black hair and purple eyes. And she's all like, then I'll have that little mermaid and the ocean will be mine. And you're like, did you just say, then I'll have that little mermaid?
Yes.
And then she gets like, she's on the boat and then she gets like found out and she's in the wedding dress and her hair gets all tousled. It's like gets all crazy. Yes. I was like, oh, that was the big moment for me where I was like, not straight.
Oh, I love those moments. That moment for me, I've had so many of those moments because like it's like when I was younger, I kept forgetting I was gay.
You wake up in a cold sweat. You're like,
am I gay?
I'm gay.
But a big moment like that for me was watching The Nanny with Fran Drescher. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I thought I wanted to be her. I wanted to fuck her.
Her hair?
No.
Her hair, big floof in the front. Like she had that big Road to Alvin Lee hair.
Yes. Love that hairstyle. Her aesthetic, everything about her was just...
Yeah, she was great. Icon. The Nanny. What was the beginning soundtrack to that? It's like, I can't remember.
It's like really catchy.
It's really catchy.
For me, it was when Captain Von Trapp yelled at Julie Andrews in Sound of Music. I was like, I want him to yell at me. Like, I was like, what is that? Like,
it was Captain Von Trapp for you? That's so good.
But he's like, you're a terrible nanny. I'm just like, I want to be a terrible nanny. Like, working in that household, I guess. Like, it didn't feel sexual, but I was like, I want that attention from him.
Yeah. It's definitely those weird moments that don't necessarily feel sexual. Like, watching Little Mermaid, I don't know if it felt sexual. I just was like, I want to be near Mean Ariel. Yes. I want to be near Ursula with black hair as Mean Ariel. Yes. And then I was sort of like, I remember feeling bad that I thought I call her Mean Ariel, but she's just Ursula cosplaying as, like, literally creepily, like putting on her skin. It's kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. But I remember being like, feeling bad that I thought she was hotter than Ariel, who was supposed to be the Disney princess that I liked.
Yeah.
Which I still, like, listen, Ariel's hot as hell, but like, I'm not sure how we got into Disney. I feel like I just brought Disney into the fold, but these are all the
natural tangent for us.
Yeah, these are all the dresses in the film, the blue dress of the Virgin Mary Easter episode, and you know, like the expectation of virginity sort of as this, like, you know, idolatry of it, and the on a pedestal and the red dress, and then she at one point goes on like to a VIP club, and she's wearing this like little black dress. So it's like the little black dress being an iconic, commodified silhouette of a woman. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as I talked about in the beginning of the film, she's wearing this like Japanese style catering dress, which sort of, I mean, it's sort of obviously become more of a topic of conversation, because of the horrific shooting, but like the over-sexualization of like Japanese and Chinese iconography and women. And so like, I worked at a catering company where we all wore these Japanese dresses. And I, for the viewers who don't know this, is I am white as hell. And I am, there is like, I could not be more white. So if you think of it, like you go to the Shangri-La and those chicks are wearing, and their slits are all the way up to their hip. So when they, because you can't bend over and the chairs are so low, you literally have to kneel beneath someone. You have to kneel beneath them and get their plate because you can't, the skirts are so short that if you bent over, you would be exposing yourself.
You'd flash.
So
that is just, that's maddening.
Yeah.
That's
so the costume design was very much absurd. In conversation with
specific.
Yeah. And then, and then Darren in her more natural state, which is probably more, you know, my own, influence of wanting to be more and perform more male, is that she's wearing all of her father's old clothes. And so they're just like very oversized. And I remember like the shirt, there's a t-shirt I wear that is so flippin' big. And and it's like there are these stupid rules in film where you can't wear oversized clothes because people need to see your body and like it needs a belt and all this crap. And so Mara, the costume designer, and I were just like, let's fucking get you in like the largest pants. And
I remember the pants.
The pants are huge and they're being tied together with like a rope. Like, speaking of Ariel, Ariel,
a rope
tying together filled with, on the beach.
Classic.
That look, and she's like, and she flips her hair. Oh God, so hot.
Oh that was a GIF, really popular GIF on Tumblr for like years.
I mean, why would it be? It's the most. It's the greatest expression of like effortless beauty. Come on, she's just got this like slouchy canvas tied with a rope, and she's like, moves her hair. I mean, I needed that.
Stunning.
I needed that, and the blue dress at the end, the sparkle blue dress. Stop.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's a little creepy, her dad gives her legs. He's like, here's a vagina.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Here's a vagina.
He does that though. He's just like, I love you. And she's like, and like, there's no mother in a lot of Disney movies, or they're evil. And there's no mother. And he's like the guy. King Triton's the guy. No mention of who birthed all these beautiful, mermaid queen singing queens. And then he's like, she's standing there and she looks back at him and he puts the scepter thing in the water and it just like gives her a vagina and he's like, you're welcome. And she's 16.
Not only a vagina and a butthole.
And a butthole. and legs.
Literally.
And then she gets married. You get it all. And she's 16. So, you know.
And she's 16. Oh, she's
16. Problematic.
It's true. The mothers are never in those movies. And, and if there is a mother that's not evil, she's absolutely dead. She is dead before that movie started.
She's been dead. Bambi's mom. She's dead. Yeah, it's
yes, dead.
Yeah,
Dory or not Dory, Finding Nemo, dead.
Out of the way. And or evil, and then there's like an evil stepmom, or dead, but then there's an evil stepmom. Yeah, I one of Lori Lozinski, who is the producer of this film, one of the producers, she's incredible. She had a theory that she said, she was like, America has mommy issues, Canada has daddy issues. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, she's like, always in American movies, the man, the mom is like dead or she's bad. And the father is the one who's like,
picks up the pieces
and is reconciling it. And I was like, it's so true. And I think, I mean, I can only relate to daddy issues. I can't really relate to mommy issues. Me too. I mean, I don't know. Those feel more. Daddy issues feel a lot more accurate across the board. But I'm like pretty sure mothers are always there and always not always, but you know what I mean. Like they're mothers.
They try their best. Yeah,
they're freaking women. Yeah. They get shit done. Like come on. So
get shit done.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my chair's moving now.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
But as we're coming to the end here, so one thing I really picked up a lot on in the film is just like, it felt like you were like blowing a kiss to Toronto. Like, hey, Toronto. Like, it's a very Toronto film. It reminded me of like Scott Pilgrim in that way, where like I recognize some of the places. You mentioned the Lakeview in one of the scenes. And also like the broken social scene poster in the scene where your friends kind of like confront you about your new job. Like, can you talk more about that? Like, was that intentional or was it a thing that's kind of just like, just natural, like it felt like a natural thing to talk about.
I mean, like, even though it was said earlier in the podcast that Toronto only builds condos, which I agree with. Toronto is both amazing and complete fucking trash. That is where we're at right now. But
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, like, the film is shot in Toronto, stars a cast of Toronto actors. We wanted it to feel both familiar and a love letter to Toronto, but also kind of like every city, because the story for women and the story of a woman finding her voice and dealing with the sexism that the music industry or all art industries or all industries or everything. I wanted to also feel very, the more you say it, the more it sort of cascades into like, and the world, I don't know. So we wanted it to feel kind of universal, so it's like every woman in every city in every sort of urban area that like where you can you can see yourself getting into a car and it being feeling dangerous, or you can feel yourself getting to arriving at a club in the basement and it feeling this. But you know, it's also very specifically like we're at Bambi's, we're we're like, you know, the Toronto streets and the Toronto music industry. Also, you know, thank you, Drake, is definitely, I always feel like I have to thank Drake because I'm like, it is on the map because, and therefore, you know, but yeah, we wanted it to feel both. And the broken social scene stuff was funny because Brendan Canning, he's in the film. He plays the music store guy who sells me the pedal steel. So he's a good, he was a good friend of Wendy, the director. And so we, he was in the, it was just a thing. But what's really cool that I want to mention is that the apartment that Darren and Peter live in was actually a build from scratch that was in, we had this warehouse that we had made the Black Void in. So Jesse Jerome, our incredible production designer, and her incredible team, like, built an apartment that, like, a Toronto apartment inside a warehouse. Yes. And, like, it looked so authentically
Toronto. Like,
you would never know. That's wild.
It's wild. Like, that was an empty warehouse, and she just built that apartment. Like, put up walls, put up everything. So, shout out to Jesse Jerome, because she, like, is another
great job.
And the cast is, the cast and the crew is just, like, stacked with talented women or, you know, female identifying or whatever, but, like, you know, people who understand, like, the female experience by one way or another.
And that's everything. I feel like when that is like something that happens in movies, like where people behind the scenes, not only on camera, are like women, femme people, it like follows throughout the entire film. Like you can tell when a guy like did a bulk of the production on something. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
And like that apartment that you're talking about, so perfect, so yeah. Toronto. Yeah. I was like, I can see myself walking into a friend's apartment like this on Dundas. Yeah. Like it literally feels so Toronto. Yeah.
And she just like taps into it. And I think that's what, mm-hmm. I think that's what, how people from Toronto in the arts, like more, you know, west of mm-hmm. Spadina, like, or mm-hmm. east of, yeah. you know, like not the center. I think yeah. that a lot of art, Toronto is just stacked with so many talented and creative people that I'm hoping that they will yeah. watch the film and see like their lifestyle absolutely. Portrayed. And it's, and it yes. being like, yeah. you know, yeah, you pre-drink at someone's house before you go to Bambi's and you show up yeah. and there's drugs and, you know, but
yes. yeah.
And that kind
the
of
movie made me miss going out for sure. Yeah,
I know.
Truly.
There's like did. A fun really dance did. Sequence and it's like, yeah, that was yeah. fun. It was fun shooting that too, because we just actually just danced. We turned on the music and it was like, aww. Yeah. And so we had so much footage in the edit. I was like, oh, what am I going to use?
Yeah.
So much fun.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Like, honestly, amazing yeah. film. I can't wait so for people cool. to watch it. I can't wait for people to like, I can't wait for it to be like one of those movies that you watch as a teen. Like, I was telling Ben this, like, I had so many independent films I watched as a teenager that I was like, this is what I want my life to be like. Or like, yeah, this cool. taught me a lesson, like morally, it mm-hmm. built me up more as like the young woman I was becoming. And I feel like this is definitely going to be a film like that for some young girl.
I hope so. Yeah. Honestly, Toronto. Like, yeah. Abba, that's like all so. I care about. I care about the teens. That's all I care about. Especially, mm-hmm. yeah. especially now with like Ginny and Georgia has been so successful and I have all these like mm-hmm. new followers and they're all like teenage women, girls or girls, women, you know,
yes.
girls and yeah. maturing women.
Yes.
And I just wanted to make a film that, I mean, the film is like, it's me dealing with my early 20s. It's me sort of mm-hmm. wrestling the things I said yes to and the positions I put myself in, you know, not, mm-hmm. not, but not autobiographically, but like the feelings I had yeah. in my early 20s. Cause I think adolescence truly mm-hmm. ends when you're like 25. That's when you just, absolutely. You're like, okay, maybe wow. I should stop yeah. doing dumb shit. And, yeah. so I care, you know, I care about how the film is received critically. I want it to get good reviews. I want it to win awards. I want all those things, but I care mm-hmm. so much more about what young women think about this film and young, absolutely. Like teenagers who are, you know, mm-hmm. dealing with questions of consent and ownership and self-worth mm-hmm. and feeling their gender and sexuality maturing and not knowing mm-hmm. or not feeling that they have agency onto like where to put it. And yeah. artists as well, just like artists across yeah. the board.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh. And also, thank you for making the movie look cool for once. So many Canadian movie. And listen, Canada, I'm always going to root for Canadian project. But sometimes, I mean, yeah. we know sometimes it could be a yeah. little bit like, come on, let's step it up. And it was so cool. the aspect ratio, everything. Like mm-hmm. it's really cool. Like there were so mm-hmm. many shots that just felt and like. Again, like if I'm a teenager watching this, like mm-hmm. I'm gonna be like, oh shit, this is a cool Toronto movie, this is a cool Canadian movie.
Yes.
I really think it's awesome.
Thank you.
And to yeah. bring it back to Pink Floyd, it's very much this okay. thing of like being audacious in the amount of time certain scenes took. Mm-hmm. Like when we're watching you create the songs, producing the songs, like that last scene at the end where it's like multiple versions of yourself that's like yeah. very something very psychedelic mm-hmm. about it. Like I think that there is there is yeah. a big benefit in doing that in films that are attractive to teens because it gives you a palette. It gives you a sense of taste. Mm-hmm. That's where, like, you get your taste from early on in those years.
I really appreciate that.
Of course. Oh my God. No, it's so true.
I just realized the end, when it's, like, all the versions of yourself, literally kind of like Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
Kind of like the prism.
The prison, the black, like, the blackness. And you will notice yes. that there's only one, like, Darren has one record in her bedroom and it's Wish You Were mm-hmm. Here. Like you can see it in her bedroom. At the yes. end, she puts all the records out, but that one record yes. is in her room. And it's like the front of that record is two men in a mm-hmm. suit and shaking hands and one of them's on fire. Yes. And I thought that was such yeah. a great image for the themes of sugar mm-hmm. daddy and performative masculinity and like mm-hmm. Gordon's character oh, and all yes. the sort of like setting men on fire, not in like a violent way, but yeah. in like a... let's burn this shit down sort of, like, burn yeah. down yeah. the patriarchy thing. I don't think that's what Pink Floyd intended, but when I look at that Wish You Were Here cover, I'm like, oh, this is about burning down the patriarchy. I understand. And I'm so happy you think it looks cool, because we fought for that so hard, and I didn't, but you know, I will say that, like, Canadian filmmakers are strapped with such small budgets that making something look cool is so expensive. It's but then we sort of leaned into Darren herself being this, like, lo-fi, grimy Gen Z musician. So we really kind of relied on Darren to tell us how to make the film. And the aspect ratio was about, you know, how, when she's in the frame, she looks powerful. But when she's sharing the frame with one of her sugar daddies or her roommate, it looks like it doesn't fit. There's tension. Yeah. We don't get to just see her face. So all the choices were intentional. So I'm happy that you guys picked up on so many of them.
Of course. Again, such an intentional project, and I appreciated watching it. So I think everybody listening, you have to watch this movie when it comes out. April 6th. Please follow Kelly and watch Ginny and Georgia. I'm so sad that we didn't get to talk about the show more, but I'm sure, like, if you want to come back, you're more than welcome.
I'll just drop in. I got the Zoom link. I'll just drop.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Exactly.
It's always live. We're always on the Zoom.
We're
link,
always
so just
on
you
Zoom.
Just pop in whenever you want.
Where can people find you? Where can we follow you? And what do you have coming up?
The best way to follow me is on Instagram at Kelly and Phyllis. It's a weird handle, but Kelly and Phyllis. You can also follow the film at Sugar Daddy Film on all platforms, and the hashtag Sugar Daddy Film as well. But I'm pretty much only on Instagram, and so that's where you should find me. I am in the woods of BC right now, but I'm gearing up to shoot the Amazon remake of A League of Their Own.
Shut the front door.
That's amazing. Yeah. Congrats.
Thank you.
That's incredible. That's like Abby Jacobson's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, cool.
So I'm,
awesome.
I'm on the team. Thank you. I'm on the team with Abby and Shantae Adams and Bemi Sola and like Darcy Carden and like all these incredibly talented.
Is Kate Berlant in it or am I crazy?
Who?
Kate Berlant.
Kate Berlant's in it. Yeah. Kate Berlant.
She is. Oh,
Roberta Calandres.
That's awesome.
Kate Berlant is. Wow. I'm not sure if you've listened to her podcast.
I love. It's incredible.
She
incredible.
Has been like taking me through the pandemic with that podcast. Yeah. So,
She's
Kate Berlant
so
is just stupid funny. The cast is stupid. It's like, if just go that on, is
so
just
exciting.
Google Amazon, you know, League of Their Own remake, and you'll see a stacked cast. It's going to be incredibly queer, incredibly female-centered.
Yes.
It's going to be so gay. It's going to be the gayest thing you've ever seen.
Woo! We're dancing.
Yeah.
We're all dancing.
Yeah.
We're all dancing.
Yeah.
That's so exciting. Oh, my God.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on. And don't forget to follow us at do whatever you want, Kelly, but for the audience, don't forget to follow us, Nostalgique, at Nostalgique Pod.
Leave us a rating.
Also, rate.
We love reviews.
I already follow you guys. I follow.
Oh my God, Kelly.
Thank you.
I'm blushing.
So nice.
Oh my goodness.
I guess it's time to say bye.
I know.
Oh, let's do it. Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for having me. So much fun.
Of course. Oh my God.
Okay, so you've been listening to ABBA.
And you've been listening to Ben. Bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.
Sonar!
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.